had the familiar surge of what felt similar to hunger and thirst. Ginger was not there, so to whom could he show his treasure? He regarded it intently for himself. He had no talent for needing someone else. He shook his hair and banged the side of his head to knock the water out of his ear. "Rainy night in Georgia," he mocked himself. "Last train to Clarksville." He dressed in khaki shorts, not bothering with underwear. 6:30 and already hot, heavily hot, steamy hot, the best weather. Nothing to eat in the refrigerator but some rice and a piece of leftover venison from a week ago, when he'd brought Julianne, the new schoolteacher from Osceola, out here. She said it was so interesting that he lived way in the woods all alone. As down to earth as she looked, she turned out to be afraid for her feet to touch the bottom of the river. She hung onto his back, her laugh verging toward a squeal, and he felt her soft thighs on his. She was hot to the touch, even underwater. But then she couldn't eat venison because she thought of Bambi. She cooked the rice, which, as he remembered, had hard kernels at the center of the grain. Then she looked at his wild salad as though it were a cow pie. JJ often went for days eating only greens he picked and fish he caught. He chewed slowly, watching her. If she was beautiful, as Lyman McCree had promised, why did he think her skin looked so stretched tight across her face that it might split like a blown-up pork bladder? And eyes that close together made a person look downright miserly. Then he rubbed his temples and looked again. A pleasant face, kind and expectant, warm. What is she wanting? He wondered as she smiled. Then he noticed her teeth, which were ground down like an old deer's. "Pokeweed and lamb quarters? I've heard of dandelion greens before. Can you eat these? That's so interesting." She pushed the fresh, pungent greens around with her fork. With the one bite she took, grit crunched between her teeth. Something she saw in his eyes appealed to her, some waiting quality. Not just a flirt or the good old boy he sometimes appeared to be. He was someone to solve, she told herself as she changed into her bathing suit in his room. She looked carefully at his things, comparing her own box bedroom to his. Her pink chenille spread and the Degas dancers on the wall, the lace curtains and view out into an empty street, to his crammed bookcases, 20 or more ink pens, mounted fish and deer heads, his rough Indian blanket on the bed. "I have no way to reach him," she thought. "And would I want to?" She felt suddenly tired, but practiced a big smile in the mirror, lifting her thick chestnut hair off her neck. Her teeth gleamed white and even. The new red maillot certainly showed off her scarlet O'Hara waist. "Cherry Bomb," she whispered. Cherry Bomb had been her nickname at Sparta High when she was homecoming queen. But that was 12 years ago. She wished she had washed the lovely greens because she was not about to eat grit. JJ thought if she said, "So interesting," again, he'd drive the fork through her eyes. He poured glasses of bourbon. "Let's toast your seventh grade class who gets to spend all that time with you." She lowered her eyes with pleasure, which shamed him. Was he becoming a goddamned hermit? He wondered how he would feel with her legs wrapped around him, lost in outer space. He knew he'd find fault with Christ Almighty. She played the flute, had a degree in music education. So what if she turned freaky in the woods? Still, he had felt a tidal wave of boredom flood through him, a craving to be alone so intense that he shuddered. Although he expected to be driving her home at 1 or 2 in the morning, top down, a little night music, he was burning up the road at 9:30. He made a pot of coffee and heated Julianne's leftover clump of bad rice with some butter. The kitchen table was littered with chert, flint,